WFAE streaming is funded by Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. So I was looking through our guest today's new cookbook. There are recipes for chicken and dumplings, mac and cheese, chicken fried steak with cream gravy, broccoli cheese soup, even bittersweet chocolate cheesecake and chocolate marshmallow mousse. All of those recipes are in the book From Mama's Table to Mine. Who's Mama? Paula Deen. That means these recipes are going to be delicious, but Paula Deen's comfort food cooking has been known to go, shall we say, heavy on the butter, the sugar, the cheese, the salt. Mm-hmm. But in the transformation from Paula Deen's table to her son Bobby's, a transformation has occurred. After all, Bobby hosts the cooking channel's Not My Mama's Meals, so he has a reputation to live up to by removing the calories and fat, but not the taste. How does he do it? And more importantly, does his mama eat his cooking? Let's find out. Bobby Deen joins us for the hour. Welcome to Charlotte.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here. I find myself flying in and out of Charlotte all the time, but it's been years since I've actually been able to visit here.
Well, we like people flying in and out. It keeps us.
I know you do. Yeah, I know you like it.
So when American takes over, tell them to continue that.
Do you think they listen to me? They ruin my bags. They don't listen to anything I have to say.
So, key question of the hour is, so does your mama eat your cooking? Does she?
Yeah, my mom, have you seen her lately?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, my mother has recently lost about 40 pounds. She looks really, really beautiful. And she was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes a couple years back, and a lot of people know that. It made big news.
Right.
And she has done exactly what she should do, which is to embrace exercise and watch her diet and do the things that she needs to do to manage her diabetes. And that does include enjoying a little bit of my food. Now, I heard you describing it as we were coming in here, and I prefer to call it very traditional is the way that my mother cooks.
How did I describe it?
Well, you said everything except laden with fat.
Okay. Well, isn't it?
Yeah,
wait a minute. I've watched her cook.
Yeah.
Let's put another pound of butter in.
Traditional Southern. Oh, whoa, hold on. Hold on. Let me defend my mother and the entire South. I'm born and raised in Albany, Georgia.
Okay.
And in the 1970s. And the food down there is. And people still eat this way. Fried chicken, collard greens, macaroni and cheese, sweet potato souffle, sweet tea. You could go walk into just about any house in the South and find what was a milk jug full of sweet tea either in the refrigerator or on the kitchen table. And that's the way that we grew up. Now, my mother's show, which is there's a lot of entertainment value there. I don't think that my mother is encouraging people to necessarily eat that way every day. I think that she's allowing you to visit her and have a good time and see really traditional comfort foods.
Right. How did you, when she first got the diagnosis, I don't want to talk a lot about this,
right.
But I think people, you know, they're curious. When she first got the diagnosis, did it surprise her?
I don't know. That's a good question for her. I don't think
because I would watch the show and think, she can't eat like this every day.
And she doesn't.
Okay.
She does not. Again, that's a television show. And, you know, you're only really getting a glimpse of a small portion of her life. You're not seeing her every day. You're only seeing her for a couple of weeks shooting that television show. So, again, she doesn't eat that way. Now, does she enjoy good traditional Southern food? Of course. Was she surprised? I'm not sure. That's something that I would need to ask her to know the answer.
Here's something that surprised me. I hope it's true. You told one interviewer that your mom once said, if it tastes good, spit it out. It's not good for you. That sounds out of character.
There's a lot of Paula-isms, and that is one of them. She says that with a very wry smile. But we all know that there's a lot of flavor in fat. There's a lot of flavor in butter. There's a lot of flavor in sour cream and mayonnaise and heavy cream. And these things taste, you know, there's a lot of flavor.
But isn't the flavor, what was I going to say? Isn't that where we get the flavor from? The fat holds the flavor, correct?
That is true. But you can also get a lot of flavor out of fresh seasonings and spices. I think that a couple of things. I think that we're accustomed to our food being over-seasoned a little bit. And I mean, not necessarily Southerners. I think we as a whole, I think that we're over-served, and I think that our food is a little bit over-seasoned. And what I'm doing is finding the main culprits in the recipe, so to speak, and either just dialing them back. What I did was basically just dissect these recipes and say, well, if it calls for 3 cups of sugar, why don't we try maybe one or a half a cup, and let's see how that works. Let's play with the recipes a little bit. But what was your question?
I don't think it was a question. I just said the flavor, the fat holds the flavor. So when you take the fat out, what happens? The flavor was going to – where I was going with that.
You got to replace it with something else.
Your book is called Bobby Dean, From Mama's Table to Mine, Everybody's Favorite Comfort Foods at 350 Calories or Less. I've eaten a lot of low-cal food. We've done a lot of food shows on this. We do one once a month on this program. And I used to do a TV show in which we cooked every day on the show. And we didn't do a lot of low-fat. But when the low-fat foods were cooked, I could always tell the difference. Can you tell your low-cal recipes from the non-low-cal versions of your recipes?
I think you can. I mean, I think if my mother prepared you a dish and I prepared one of my dishes from my book and put them side by side and you tasted them both, yes, I would be lying if I said that you couldn't tell the difference.
But are they equally satisfying once you get accustomed?
To me, they are, because I'm 42 years old now, and I, at 30 years old, made a lifestyle change. I began to embrace – we were working really, really hard in this restaurant, 15, 16 hours a day, my mother, my brother, and myself. And I found myself taking better care of our business than I was of my body. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, in order to be around, I need to take care of myself. So I began to embrace exercise. I began to enjoy running and lifting weights and just became an active guy. And when you do that, it just changes the way that you look at food. And it did for me. I didn't turn my back on these traditional foods. I still love them and enjoy them. I go to my mother's house. My mother lives 5 minutes from me. And I go to her house on Sunday and I eat exactly what she serves up. But I'm in the gym on Monday, and I live through some sort of balance. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that you can eat any particular way every day. You couldn't eat – you'd go crazy if you tried to eat low-cal, low-fat food every day. You have to enjoy your life.
Well, plus you and your brother and your mother were running the restaurant that the family has in Savannah, which is based on – her Southern cooking.
Absolutely.
So if you're running a restaurant and you're there every day, and God knows the restaurant business, as you well know, is all-consuming for people, you've got to be around that food. That's where you eat, I would think, right?
Yes.
Time to go out.
Hey, look, I've spent the night in that restaurant before. My mother has. So has my brother. It's very much like a child. I mean, you have to and particularly with the restaurant business, it's 24/7. And so, we were spending lots and lots of time there. Plus, our business was, like a lot of other businesses, was born of necessity. Yeah. We were flat broke. You know, we're originally from Albany, Georgia, moved to Savannah, Georgia in 1987.
Your mother became the bag lady.
Yes.
Not literally.
Yeah, well, it was kind of literally. It was right next door to begging. But my mom was working in our home kitchen around the clock, and she would send my brother and me out on little delivery routes every day. And we wore them down. You know, we didn't have a business license. We didn't have uniforms.
We didn't have a commercial kitchen either.
No, right? We didn't. We were doing what we had to do. And the food was delicious. And once people began to be able to depend on us to be there at the same time every day, that's what our mom said, you'll be at the same place at the same time every day.
How old were you?
I was 18 when we started.
So you were out of school?
Yeah. Well, just barely.
Yeah.
We moved to Savannah. I was a senior in high school. I was so mad. I hated Paula Deen. and I don't mean that literally, but I was very angry. I was a senior in high school, had 3 months left to go. My parents moved to Savannah. Oh. And it was just, I thought it was the worst thing in my life. And it's so funny how life works. It turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to us.
Sure. So she became the bag lady. She was bagging what? Tuna fish sandwiches and things
like that? Yeah. Egg salad, chicken salad. She would do homemade soups. We had these crystal clear 6x6 containers so you could see the food. And obviously is a good cook, and she's very creative. So we would do what she called trio sandwiches. So she would make a chicken salad, egg salad, tuna salad, for instance, cut them in half and have them face up where you could, and they were all side by side where you could see the three of them wrapped in saran wrap. And so our food was, we wanted people to be able to see it when we walked in and presented it. And she would do Savannah is a hot town, so you know during the summers we would do beautiful fruit salads, cold broccoli salads, just all kinds of different things. Lasagnas I remember doing, and the food. Once people tasted it, I mean, can you imagine? Paula Deen has just prepared this just a few minutes ago, and I walk in and serve it to you at your desk. And you know who loved it was the bosses. We would go to banks, we would go to doctor's offices, dentist's offices, and things like that, and we would walk right up to their desks and serve them lunch right there. So the bosses were like, hey, this is great, because people are just, you know, they're not leaving. They're staying here for lunch.
Yeah.
So it was good. And that little business evolved into, we moved into a Best Western motel on the south side of Savannah, and it was a turnkey operation. My mother went in there and spoke to a very kind man who I still know. His name's Bob Anderson, Robert Anderson in Savannah. And he said, okay, I will let you move into this, into my Best Western space over here. You'll serve 3 meals a day, 7 days a week, open at 6 in the morning, and you'll serve dinner until 10 o'clock at night. Oh. And we were there for a few years, and it was really, really difficult because we were set up just off of their entranceway into the hotel where they served a continental breakfast. So we would come in, open at 6, and we would find their guests would come down, get their free danishes and their orange juice and things like that, and then they would walk over and sit down at our dining room tables, and they would use our napkins, and they would eat their free breakfast and leave. And it was very frustrating.
Yeah.
And we didn't do a big breakfast business. So we were there for some time before we decided to begin to give every person that came in for lunch cheese biscuits and hoe cake cornbread, and people liked that. That was sort of, it was complimentary. Right when you walk in and sit down, bang, you're going to get some fresh hot bread. And we figured out that Southern food was what we were going to do. It's what we knew and what we were going to do. So we wanted to do fried chicken and collard greens, the things that I just mentioned a few minutes ago. And we wanted to do it blue plate style. But we began to do lots and lots of business in this. You would never expect it. It's a Best Western motel. This was not a hotel. It's
right.
A motel.
Well, believe me, I know.
And this is south of Victory Drive. So we weren't in the historic district. We were on the other side of town. And it got to where we had a line out the door. So we put out a little 6-foot folding table with chafing dishes, catering chafing dishes on it, like you would see set up at a banquet. And we would put out what we called our hump day buffet on Wednesdays. We quickly figured out Wednesday was our busiest day. We started to do it every day, and here we are 25 years later. We have a destination restaurant
in
downtown Savannah.
And what this is interesting to me, that your mom, when she first got married, unless this is an apocryphal story, didn't know how to cook.
Yeah, it's true.
So she went from not knowing how to cook in a very short time to being one of the most successful people who associated with food in the world and spawned you.
That's well put.
Well, I mean, your career.
Yeah, right. I like it.
That's an unfortunate choice of words, isn't it? But she gave birth to you in your career.
That's true.
And so now you have a whole family involved in the food business. In your wildest dreams as a young person, did you ever think that you'd be doing what you're doing today?
Never. I think that a lot of people can say that. I was the typical kid that I'm going to be a baseball player. You know, I'm going to play for the Braves. Dreams of a kid. But I found that life happens to you. And it did to us. We had our restaurant and were in business for 10 years before I finally said, well, we might be onto something. This might be okay. Because I was accustomed, my whole family was, we were used to having that rug pulled out from under us. We came from, our home life was very unstable. We moved a lot. God bless my father. I love him. But we grew up in a very dysfunctional home. Mm-hmm. My father came from a long line of alcoholics, and my mother was, imagine this. And now let me say this. My father and I have a great relationship, and the man that my mother is married to right now is not my father or my brother's father. A lot of people don't know this.
Okay.
We'll come back to it, I suppose.
We will. Bobby Deen, who does television and knows cues, is our guest today. His book is called From Mama's Table to Mine. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and 123NC.com, providing North Carolina with instant access to online criminal records for over a decade. Criminal records can be searched online at 123NC.com. Charlotte and global competitiveness, the strides we've made and what's left to do. That's what we'll talk about tomorrow at 9 on this program. By the way, our guest today, Bobby Dean, is signing his book, Bobby Dean from Mama's Table to Mine, tonight at 7 at the Barnes & Noble at the Arboretum. We'd also like you to join a WFAE public conversation on voices in the gun debate tonight, February 19th. Well, actually, Tuesday, February 19th, not tonight, at the Blumenthal's Booth Playhouse. Register to attend this free community forum right now at WFAE.org, where you can also check out some of Bobby Dean's recipes from Mama's Table to Mine. We'll come right back with more of our conversation with him in just a moment. Stay with us.
On the next Day in Ream show, President Obama speaks to both houses of Congress and the nation. Analysis of key themes in his State of the Union address and the Republican response.
Join us for 2 hours of the Diane Ream Show this morning and every weekday morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Bobby Dean is our guest, author of From Mama's Table to Mine, a host of the cooking channel's Not My Mama's Meals. Mama is Paula Dean. His show airs Wednesdays at 9. I think that is correct. And he is in town today to sign books at 7 o'clock tonight at the Barnes & Noble at the Arboretum. I interrupted you in the middle of a great story about your mom and your family, your dysfunctional family, and how it came to past that you are one of the most successful families in America.
We are. I think I interrupted your show. I don't think you interrupted me.
Please feel free.
There's so much to tell, but I'll try to. And I'm Paula's kid, and I got a lot of her in me. I will talk and talk, but I will try to give you the condensed version. Going back to what you said about my mother not being able to cook. By the time my mother was 20 years old, she had lost both of her parents, and she was married, and she had one son, my older brother Jamie. She also had her 16-year-old brother that she had to take care of living with her. So my mother, just like our business, out of necessity, learned how to cook. My grandmother, my great-grandmother Paul was a very good cook. My Aunt Peggy is a very good cook. So she learned how to cook, and she was the mother at home. You know, my mom did work, but – you know, there was a time when my mom battled agoraphobia. This is a pretty public thing, too. I remember when I was a young man, my mother hyperventilating into a brown paper bag at the thought of walking out the door. I mean, couldn't even take my brother and me to school. And it's crazy now that she is this gregarious woman who can walk out in front of just crowds and audiences.
How did she overcome it?
By on her own. Isn't that crazy? We didn't have – there was no money. There was no – you know what? Here's the story. She was watching Phil Donahue one day, mm-hmm. and there was a man on there who was describing agoraphobia. My mother knew that she had something, but she didn't know what it was. And he put a name to it for her. And here's something else. I recently met this man. He heard the story, and he – years later, I met him sort of in a random way, and he gave me a book and said, I'm the man who wrote the book that your mom saw on Phil Donahue. And so anyhow – my mother just overcame it on her own. She's the strongest person I've ever known, and she's wonderful and gives my brother has laid groundwork for my brother and me to enjoy success that we never would have known.
Well, she's an industry now, and her television shows are truly popular and absolutely fun to watch, even if you don't intend to go into the kitchen and boil water. She's fun to watch, and what she turns out as the result of her work looks absolutely unbelievably good, and you want to be in the studio audience because she will share things with the audience, and you just think, damn, why am I not there? But how did that happen for her? How did she get onto television, and how did you get on television, and what's it like to be – what was it like for her to be that in that first – television show, the very first one.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great story as well. My mother, we were running the Lady and Sons restaurant. This is a few years later. We had moved down into the historic district in Savannah, Georgia, and which there is a whole nother story. My mother has a friend named Carol Perkins who was running a business in Savannah who knew a man named Gordon Elliott, I don't know if you know who Gordon is or not, but Gordon is this 6'7" Australian man. He runs Follow Productions. He had a television show called The Gordon Elliott Show. He was on, you'll remember this, he was on A Current Affair.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If you saw him, you'd know him. He did Campbell's Soup commercials for a long time. Anyhow, he had a television show on the Food Network called Gordon Elliott's Door Knock Dinners. And this was the closest thing to reality television that I've ever seen. It was literally Gordon, a cameraman, Gordon carrying a stick mic. You would go into a random neighborhood someplace in the country, knock on doors, say, how are you? And he would have a chef with him, a culinary person with him. He would say, we would like to come into your house, go through your cabinets, make a meal with whatever you've got. You can't do your makeup. You can't fix your hair. You can't vacuum. You can't do anything. We want to walk in and do this cold. And it was a really, really great show. So anyhow, Gordon was in Charleston, South Carolina, shooting the show. Carol called Gordon, said, Gordon, there's this woman in Savannah you have got to meet. You need to come down here, have lunch, meet this woman. She would be perfect for Door Knock Dinners. So Gordon comes down, and I still remember the day. He and my mother share lunch, and they get along famously from the beginning. Gordon says, well, come be on my show. So my mother and my brother and I all go out to Las Vegas, Nevada. This is the first time my brother had ever been on an airplane. Yeah. We fly out to Las Vegas, Nevada, shoot an episode of Door Knock Dinners with my mother. And I'll never forget, we shot all day long. It knocked on, let me tell you this, Gordon knocked on 3 or 4 doors and had them shut in his face at first. My mom kind of got sick of that. Mm-hmm. Knocked on the final door, the one we got into. A woman with 2 young boys opened the door, and my mom pushed Gordon to the side and stepped up and started talking to this woman and told her what she wanted to do. And before you knew it, we were in that house. And I still remember Gordon looking at my mama sideways with a raised eyebrow going, kind of like, what is going on here? At the end of the day, we got into a car together. Gordon was driving. My mother was in the passenger seat. I was in the rear behind Gordon, and my brother was next to me. And I still remember we were sitting at a red light, and Gordon looked over at my mom, and he said, Paula, you are a star. One day, you're going to have your own show, and I'm going to produce it. Well, that is exactly what happened. Gordon has been wonderful to my family. Wow. Everything he's ever said, he has done and stood behind. He's a fantastic guy. He also produces a television show called The Chew that's on ABC.
Oh, yeah.
During the days,
yeah.
On afternoons. So, which is wonderful. He shoots everything that you've ever seen us do has been produced by Gordon Elliott, and he's a great guy. And so that's the story of the first time that she was on. And then so Gordon did give her the opportunity. She went to Millbrook, New York, and shot her television show that was called Paula's Home Cooking at the time in Gordon's home. In upstate New York, Gordon would, you know, because when you're doing a pilot television show and they're giving you a chance, they're going to do it as inexpensively as they can.
Right.
So they would fly my mother to Millbrook, and she would be there for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, stay in this little bed and breakfast. And I remember it was just miserable. We would talk to her on the phone, and she would be just lonely. But anyhow, we would go up because from the beginning, my mother has wanted to bring my brother and me in on her success. So they had us, you know, on her show, and Gordon would come downstairs in his underwear and he'd be playing this guitar, and it was just this light, fun atmosphere. But I didn't know anything about television, and they would prop me up there next to mom while she was doing recipes, and I would just stand there, and Gordon would be like, Bobby, you got to get something out of the refrigerator or something. So I've spent the first 2 seasons of my guesting on my mother's show with my head stuck in Gordon's refrigerator. Anyhow, the show took off and did really well. They eventually started shooting it in Savannah, and my mother has blossomed and bloomed into, I think that she's 12 years now that she's been on television.
Yeah. And evidently so have you.
Guesting, but now I'm about to start my 4th season of Not My Mama's Meals.
So Not My Mama's Meals is a reference to I'm going to cook.
Yes.
But I'm not going to cook what mama cooks. So is that right?
I'm going to cook what mama cooks, but I'm going to cook it differently.
So when that came about, and you got the cookbook which is based on that too. What was your mother's reaction to that?
I get that question from time to time, and it usually comes like this. Is your mama mad at you for what you're doing to her recipes? And no, she's not. Let me tell you what, Mike. My mother taught me how to cook. When I got to be about 7 years old, big enough to look over the stove, she started teaching me how to cook. And one of the first things she said to me was, Bobby, whenever you do a recipe, go exactly by it that first time. So you know exactly what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime after that, make it your own. Do whatever you want to do. So she gave me creative license as a young person that there were no rules in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the great thing about this show and about this book is that I don't have to tell any lies. This is very organic. This is how I live. I'm an active man who enjoys exercise and good food, and I love the foods that I grew up with, but I would like to be able to prepare them in different ways that allows me to eat them more often.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah, that's I think, an important thing for people to hear, that you say something along the line, I'm going to paraphrase here, of you know, you love Sunday dinner, and you'd like to have it more often. You can't have Sunday dinner every night of the week because it takes too long to prepare, and it's too laden with the good stuff that makes you fat and overweight and unhealthy. But if you can figure out a way to do it healthily, you can have it every night.
And you can. There are alternative ways to do it. And it's very simple. I mean, what I've done, I haven't pulled a rabbit out of the hat. All I've done is look at these recipes and go, well, let me see what's really high in fat and calories here and see if we can replace or dial it back or just exchange it for something else. But I have sort of taken Sunday dinner and turned it into Monday dinner, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And I try to live with balance. I'm like an 80-20 guy. 80% of the time, I'm super careful about what I eat and drink and what I do. And then 20% of the time, I realize that, hey, there might be a bus right outside that door with my name on it. So you've got to enjoy your life and live. There's not one perfect person walking this earth. And I'm not encouraging people to deprive themselves. What I want to do is, I'm aware that some of the worst foods for you are some of the most inexpensive and the most easily accessible. And I grew up in a home where my mother taught us how to cook, told us that the kitchen is the heart of the home, which I truly believe. Being in the kitchen together with your family encourages conversation. It encourages creativity. Nothing but good things come from that. And I would like for people to get in the kitchen with their families and cook together. I wanted these recipes to be affordable, number one, because let's face it, people are you have to be frugal where we are right now. These are those kind of times. So I wanted these recipes to be simple, affordable, and low in fat and calories so people could feel good about it. Because you know what else is? It's something that's really ironic. We have a couple of different problems in this country. We have children who only get one meal a day, and that's at school. We have a hunger problem in this country, which is shameful.
And yet we also have an obesity.
And we have an obesity problem. How ironic is that? How strange is that? It's so wild. I can't even wrap my mind around it.
Yeah.
So I would like to think that this cookbook will also be helpful to people.
Yeah. The recipes in this cookbook are 350 calories or less. What's so magic about 350?
Well, I knew that was a number that I knew it was achievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that with 350 calories that we could still have flavor and maintain the integrity of the recipe. And I worked very closely with a woman named Melissa Clark, who she is a food writer for the New York Times, and she's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And my brother and I have got a couple of cookbooks out together.
Okay.
And I've collaborated with her in the past. I've learned so much from her. She is a very generous woman. She's very kind, and she's taught me a lot about food. And we together decided that was the number we wanted to hit. We worked really hard on this book, and we did. We came in under those at least at 350 or less in every one of them.
I understand that one of the foods that your restaurant in Savannah is famous for is its fried chicken.
Yes, sir.
And you have a recipe in here for unfried chicken. Is that to say you can't make fried chicken healthy and low fat and 350 calories?
I mean, you kind of can't. There are some things that just are what they are. Do you know what I mean? A cantaloupe is a cantaloupe. fried chicken is good. It's
really good.
And what makes it so good is that chicken skin,
uh-huh,
that beautiful golden crust, and the fact that it's deep fried.
Yeah.
Now, there are some other secrets and tricks that make it really good too, but it just is what it is. What I've done is, again, culprits we talk about. And with chicken, it's the skin. There's a lot of fat in that skin. There's a lot of flavor there, too. So we have removed the skin in this recipe. We put that chicken through a simple egg wash, and then we put a faux crust on it with unsweetened cornflakes, which sounds weird. But go to your cereal aisle, find cornflakes that obviously unsweetened, pound them out in like a zipper bag of some sort, and that makes a great faux crust for chicken. It's a really good way to add mouthfeel, fiber, but without adding fat and cholesterol. And then when you bake that chicken, you've got a very low in fat natural dish. that tastes really good. And that faux crust, it kind of fools your mouth. Sometimes you have to trick yourself.
Does it taste like fried chicken, or does it have a different taste?
Nothing tastes like fried chicken but fried chicken.
That's right.
It feels like fried chicken.
But you talked about the mouth feel, and that's important. That's also something that fat adds to food. It adds this mouth feel that is so satisfying. Mm. Can you achieve that if you take the fat out? Can you achieve that with the unfried chicken that you're suggesting in this book?
Well, you're not you're not gonna get a greasy feel in your mouth. Let's say it that way. But that dish is very satisfying. I get lots of compliments on it.
Now, in the book, also every single recipe you list before and after amounts of fat, calories, carbohydrates, sodium, protein, and fiber. The difference is astounding to me.
Mm-hmm.
Did it surprise you when you first did all the calculations on this?
It did. I was pleasantly surprised in most of them because I realized we were going to have success when we started doing this.
Because you knew what it tasted like already.
Yes. I was pleasantly surprised and really, really happy with the majority of the recipes. All of these things are really, really doable. There's one thing. Mm-hmm. I love fried green tomatoes. It's a very traditional Southern dish, and I did them on my show. And I'll tell you what, in order to do a good fried green tomato, you need flour, salt, and pepper. You need a really well-seasoned cast iron skillet, and you need some bacon renderings or some lard. I took green tomatoes and I covered them in panko and I baked them, and it's not the same thing. You know what I mean?
The other thing about 350 calories, I don't know what the average person eats at dinner. I've never done the calculation. I don't have that problem, thank God. But it seems to me that I think I pulled out a frozen dinner the other night, one of those terrible frozen dinners that you buy because you have no time to do anything, and you pull it out, you stick it in the microwave for 10 minutes, and you eat it, and you think, ugh. But it was around 280 calories, maybe 300 calories.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, about 320. Probably half of it was fat. But 2-3 hours later, I was hungry.
Oh, really?
So at 350 calories, if you have dinner at 6, will you be hungry again by 8 or 9?
Well, you know what? I think what you're talking about are – processed foods, prepackaged foods that are when you begin to look past just the calories, look at the sodium, look at everything that's on there, and that will begin to change the way that you feel about food. It'll make you pay a little bit closer attention. But what I'm offering in this book are fresher foods that are satisfying and filling. And I'm encouraged. This is something neat in the back of that book too, is I've got meal plans for 1500 calories a day for the entire week that you can look at, and I'm offering you 3 meals a day, and it's a good guideline for people. That is not the question that you asked me, but the answer is yes. These are satisfying foods, and you don't get – that comes with the prepackaged stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's like I love good Chinese food, but a lot of these things contain MSG and different things like that that sort of fool you for a little while, and then, an hour later you become hungry. But I'm encouraging you to go to the store and get fresh poultry or fresh fish or fresh vegetables, and these things are fulfilling.
1,500 calories a day.
Mm.
How many do you eat? Because you're in shape.
Yeah.
You're about what, 5?
I'm 5'9".
5'9"?
I'm about 175.
Yeah. So, I mean, can you live? Can you, who go to the gym,
Live
on 1,500 calories a day?
I probably eat 2,000. It depends. I wake up, and now I'm on the road a lot. It's difficult to eat on the road. But I wake up in the morning, and I love to start the day with a fresh fruit smoothie with, whey protein and things like that. So, and I drink lots and lots of water. I run a lot too, though.
Yeah.
So I expend a lot of calories.
Yeah.
And when you are really active, your body is like a car engine. And when you get that thing going, it continues to hum even after you've exercised and you get home and sit down. You're still continuing to burn calories. So 2,000 is about typical for me. That keeps me at this weight and feeling good.
We're going to go through some of the recipes in the book here in the next segment of this program. And some of these recipes we've been allowed by Bobby Dean to put on our website, our food blog at WFAEats.org. So if you'd like to steal some and then go buy the book for more, that's up to you. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Sir,
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Charlotte Symphony, presenting Night Sounds Pop-Up Opera Friday. Classic opera choruses from Verdi's Aida and La Traviata includes a pre-concert reception, charlottesymphony.org. And the Goddard School, offering childhood preparation needed for social and academic success. Learning for fun, learning for life at the Goddard School, goddardschool.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, President Obama speaks to Congress and the nation last night. Diane and her guests will provide an analysis of the key themes in his State of the Union address and the Republican response in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. Bobby Dean has shared some of his recipes from his book, From Mama's Table to Mine, with us. You can find his recipes at WFAE.org, actually WFAEats.org, our food blog.
I'm Marco Werman. No one brings you world news like PRI's The World. Our reporters have one mission, to bring you a coherent picture of your day around the globe, to connect your world with what's happening beyond our borders. Join us weekday afternoons at 3 on WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. Our guest today is Bobby Dean, who is the star of his own television show, Not My Mama's Meals, Wednesday at 9 on the Cooking Channel. His new book is called From Mama's Table to Mine, Everybody's Favorite Comfort Foods at 350 Calories or Less. And there are some recipes in there for your absolutely favorite comfort foods, things that you want, you crave, and you just know you shouldn't eat, but now you can. Bobby Dean, of course, is Paula Dean's son. Were there recipes as you went through your litany of favorite foods that just didn't make the cut? You just couldn't put them in the book. You can't do them on the show because they just can't be done any other way than the way they're supposed to be done.
No, I think that where you would have the most difficult, and what was our biggest hurdle, was when you get to the sweets, mm-hmm. Do you know? Because traditional Southern desserts are, man.
Like pecan pie.
Yeah. Oh. Yes. And red velvet cake and gooey butter cake and peach cobbler. These things are, they're real good because they have a lot of butter. You know what I mean? So, but no, we found a way to do it. You can, again, you have to be creative. And for instance, the red velvet cake, I just mentioned it. I did a red velvet cake on my show where we actually used beets and gave it a really natural and two, one thing that we've not really talked about is portion sizes is another way to cut back on fat and calories. Rather than, I even did a cheesecake in there.
And
part of how we did it is, instead of, if you go to a restaurant and you order a cheesecake, you're going to get a wedge. You know what I mean? We encourage.
They don't call the Cheesecake Factory that for nothing.
Right. It's a factory. Yeah. Exactly. So we encourage you to have smaller slices. But in my red velvet cake, for instance, the topping, there's a lot of fat and calories in the topping of a lot of desserts. And we found that something as simple as going from a regular cream cheese to a Neufchâtel cheese makes a big difference, because American cream cheese, we use heavy cream and we use milk to create that. And the French with Neufchâtel only use the milk. So it's naturally lower in fat and calories. We use lots of buttermilk. Yeah. I use lots of...
Is that lower in fat?
It's naturally low in fat.
Okay.
Buttermilk is. And we use lots of... and people have gotten on me a little bit about this, because I think maybe I was overdoing it in the beginning. But I love Greek yogurt. And Greek yogurt is a great ingredient to use to cut sour cream, heavy cream. It's a good replacement for different things. And it has wonderful probiotics in it that encourage digestion and that are just good for your body. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about your car being – your car. We were talking about your car. We were talking about your body being very much like a car engine. Mm-hmm. And what you put into it will determine how it runs and how it behaves. And if you can eat a little bit more naturally and closer to the – to the earth is kind of the way that I describe it, you'll feel better.
You may want to join our conversation. If so, 704-926-WFAE, that's 704-926-9323, or 800-603-WFAE, or online at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. You've included in this book some exercise
tips along the way. Now, that's something nobody wants to hear about. I'm just kidding.
No, you're right. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Look, food and exercise go hand in hand. One does not work without the other.
And if you do that, you can do what you like to do, and that is every once in a while splurge and have the real thing.
Absolutely. Look, if Paula Deen, my mother, calls me and says, "Son, come over, I'm cooking Sunday dinner," I'm going to go sit down and I'm going to enjoy it. My brother said to me, we were in conversation with a few other people, and he said, "Bobby's got the right idea. He works out enough that he can eat and drink anything that he wants to." And you know what? That's kind of the case. If you embrace it and you take it in and it becomes your lifestyle, you can eat and drink what you want to in moderation.
Yeah. You start this book with appetizers, and I would wager that aside from desserts, appetizers is where we really put on the fat and the calories.
It's true. That's the meal that you have before the meal.
Yeah, particularly if you go out to eat. Because, you know, you go to some of these places and they have these, I don't want to name the restaurant, but they have these blooming onions where they've deep fat fried this onion. And it's probably delicious. I mean, I've never had one. It's probably delicious. Is it?
Yeah, it is.
But it is deep fat fried.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That tells you all you need to know right
there. That's right. And, you know, I love calamari, but it's
me
deep fried.
Me too. That is one of my that's one of my food vices. I love calamari. I love french fries. I love a nice cold beer.
Yeah,
I love a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
I love mayonnaise. My mama taught me early that french fries and mayonnaise are like a hand in a glove.
I can't. It makes my teeth are tingling.
It's very European, I think. That's what they tell me.
Really? Okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying that you start with appetizers. So that's since that's one of the fattening parts of the meal, how did you do it?
Oh, well, gosh, are you looking at a particular recipe? I'm sitting over here looking at a desk.
Let me see here. I don't know.
I mean, look, everything that I did, Mike, was elementary.
You start the very first one in here, if I'm not mistaken, is pickled shrimp. Now, we had a chef on here from Johnson and Wales a couple of months ago who did something similar to this. It was an Asian version of shrimp that was, I don't know how he pickled it, but it was the singular most delicious thing I've ever eaten.
Really? So you had somebody in that actually brought food to you?
Yeah.
And look at me.
What's wrong with you?
Apparently, I'm a terrible guest.
Maybe you didn't get the memo.
I didn't.
All guests bring food. Some bring money.
I have a guitar pick, and I've got a half-drank bottle of water.
But you begin the appetizer
section. Well, that's where it all starts. And the pickled shrimp I live on the coast in Savannah, and we're fortunate to be able to, and I'm not just talking about me and my family, lots of people in Savannah, we can walk right into our backyard. And you can throw a cast net out there, and we can catch delicious, fresh shrimp, crabs. We do, but that pickled shrimp dish is really cool because it's beautiful. So if you're having a party, you can have small ball jars and give them out to guests as sort of a little walk around type thing. It also holds very well, you know, for a little while in the fridge. But shrimp are they're high in protein. I think if shrimp has a downfall, I think it's cholesterol is what's in shrimp is the only negative. But again, what we did with these, if you look at that recipe, if you look at all at how it's prepared and what it's done, where's the fat?
Where are the calories?
Yeah, there isn't any.
But you begin
with appetizers.
You begin the appetizer section with Bobby's pimento cheese.
Oh, it's the best. You know what? I will tell you right here, right now, I make the best pimento cheese in my family. I also make the best egg salad. It's better than my mama's.
Really?
Maybe not the one that's in that book. But I make one that'll knock your socks off. There's a spinach and artichoke dip in there, too, really good. And see, these things like
spinach. Hush puppies are in here. How do you do hush puppies that are laden with fat? How do you do it?
You can't.
but wait, they're in here.
Yeah, they are. I told you, man, really, really simple way. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's baking instead of frying.
You also have crab cakes, mini Savannah crab cakes.
Yeah,
and
those
are
great.
When I first looked at the picture, I thought, look at those chunks of butter sitting in there. But they're chunks of lemon.
Yeah, exactly. Lemon is very, very good for you. The lemon juice is very good for you. Lemon zest is very good for you. And if you look at the crab cakes, you'll see that they are small.
Yes, they are.
Portion control is important. But a crab cake is not really that fattening a dish to prepare unless you fry it. And there are a lot of places that deep fry crab cakes.
You know, we talked a minute ago about the obesity epidemic that we have. When I was a kid, I don't recall there being a lot
We're giant
of obese
now.
People. We are giant now. They're changing the sizes of seats in transportation vehicles and movie theaters because we can't fit in the seats. Now, is it because we got really fat by fat and happy, I mean really rich in the 90s and 2000s. It became a very wealthy country for a while. And you could buy almost anything. And the houses got bigger. Everything got bigger. And we had bigger portions on the plate in restaurants. You expected them to come out with like two chicken breasts on the plate with laden with mashed potatoes. Otherwise, why would I go there again?
After your appetizer.
Exactly right. And we would eat it. Is it because of a lack of portion control or because we ate too much because we could afford to do it? What do you think is going on here?
I think that we have become just a far more sedentary society.
Yeah.
I think that we are a country of convenience. I think that all you have to do is look at technology, which is wonderful. But people want it now, want it fast, want it really easy. And, you know, the traditional food that we serve in our restaurant, the reason that people come from not just all over the country, but all over the world to eat at the Lady and Sons and at Mrs. Wilkes and at different restaurants in Savannah is because that food has stood the test of time. Now, our ancestors used to plow the fields and work the land and work all day long from dawn to dusk. And you needed that sustenance.
Yeah.
I mean, your lunch was going to be a big, heavy lunch because you need it. You were expending lots and lots of energy. You don't have to look very far nowadays to see that we're not really – of course there are hard workers. I'm not saying that there are not. I'm just saying that things have become far more easy and convenient for us. We've made it that way. That's just where we are. We're advancing. But you have to make adjustments for that.
Right.
You can't eat the same way if you're expending far fewer calories.
Right.
Do you know? It's very elementary and basic in my estimation.
Okay. Let's take a call from Kate in Charlotte. Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Kate.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good. I just want to say I love your show, and I also love your mom's show. I like how you guys kind of play off of each other.
Thank you.
I really like it when she's on your show.
Ah.
And you guys do the challenges.
Thank you.
I have one of her cookbooks, and I love it.
Okay.
And I have always, since the first recipe that I made, you know, I always do this with recipes. I make it to the T the first time, and then I go through and I try to see what I can cut. And of course, with your mom's recipes, I'm always like, I don't need a whole stick of butter in that. I'll try half. The same thing with baking. Like you said, you know, you can cut a lot of the sugar out and it still tastes really good.
Of course.
And with sweet tea, something that I've started doing, because I'm really not a huge sugar fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
I do half and half with sweet tea.
Yep.
Half sweet, half unsweet.
Yes.
And no sugar in coffee. Once you drink it that way, I mean, I can't stand if I accidentally pick up my husband's coffee with sugar in it. I think it's just disgusting.
Really?
Yeah.
So you just drink it straight black? It's really good for you, actually. Do you know that?
Straight
black coffee is good. I beg your pardon. I'm sorry, Kate. I was talking over you.
Oh, I put milk or soy milk in it.
Soy milk.
I don't know if that cuts down on the health benefits.
It's a good way to go. Here's something that a lot of people don't know, that skim milk is if you drink milk without any fat in it at all, it's basically just sugar water. So it's better.
Okay.
You need some of the fat in that milk just to digest it. So you should be drinking a 1% or a – I have soy milk in my refrigerator at home too. It lasts longer. I like it. The flavor's there. You can get, you know, vanilla, soy, different things like that. But
what about coconut milk?
Coconut milk? I like coconut water a lot. I like coconut milk too. Yeah, anything that's natural, anything that's more natural is good with me. But I can't drink my coffee black. You know what, Kate? I was never a coffee drinker, and then my mom gave me this amazing coffee maker. I was never a coffee drinker, and my mom gave me this amazing coffee machine, and now I wake up in the morning and drink coffee.
What was amazing about that? Tell me what it is.
It is a Jura machine,
uh-huh.
And it's the kind that you load with beans, and it grinds the beans for you and makes individual cups of coffee. So you walk in, wake up in the morning, walk in there, turn it on, stick a cup up under it, bang, it grinds the beans and makes you a fresh, delicious coffee. Cup of coffee right there on the spot. I'm trying to embrace what you do, Kate, because I know that it's good for you to drink just black coffee, but I can't do it. I grew up, my mom likes what she calls cowgirl coffee, real sweet and real creamy, but I would like to get off of coffee completely because teas are far better for you. So I'm trying to embrace a lot of tea.
Okay.
Yeah, and teas, I think it's easier to drink without sugar.
Far easier.
As well. I mean, I like the bitterness of the coffee without sugar and the tea without sugar. So,
well, that's a good thing.
Kate, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kate.
I do have a quick quick question, though. You mentioned about getting kids in the kitchen. What's a good age to start?
Well, I don't have any kids. I have nephews. But when I was growing up, whenever they can see over the stove, about 7 or 8 years old is a good time to encourage them to get in there with you and do simple things at breakfast. Scramble eggs.
But
make waffles and pancakes.
Supervise.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I needed lots of supervision. Don't let them get burnt.
All right.
Thanks. Let me go to Michael in Asheville. Michael, you're on WFAE.
Hey, how you doing, Bobby?
Hey, good morning, Michael. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Hey, I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you, brother.
What's your mom's shows for a long time, and actually been to your restaurant as well and enjoyed that. And
thank you.
I just really appreciate how you – I'm 42 as well.
Good.
And I appreciate the way you look at things as far as moderation. You know, don't be sedentary.
Yes.
Don't get crazy on the processed food.
Yes.
Don't get crazy on anything. Just, you know, you can do a little bit of everything. Just, you know, my mom kind of brought me up that way as well.
Very good.
Why do you think more people aren't like that? Why do you think people have to go to extremes? Why do people have to get on a Nutrisystem? Why do they have to get on a special diet? Is it brain chemistry? What do you think it is?
Wow. If I had those answers, I'd be writing books,
isn't
Michael.
Isn't sugar addictive?
It is. I think that anything can be.
Anything is.
I think that anything that you overdo can be addictive. I'm not sure, Michael. I think that people just get – we're definitely creatures of habit, and people really get set in their ways. And I think that some people find themselves one day they just wake up and look in the mirror and go, holy smokes, how did this happen to me? And I think that some people – give up. And it's very important. I don't know if you have this in your life, but a support system is wonderful. My closest friend is a strength and conditioning coach, and he's a very athletic guy. And then my other closest friend is a 12-year brown belt jiu-jitsu instructor. And I make sure that I'm around these guys all the time. And they keep me in check, and they keep me wanting to do the things that I want to do. So I think that it's got something to do with who you surround yourself with.
Michael, thank you for your call. Krista couldn't hold, but she says she loves Bobby Dean's food and thinks it's better than his mom's.
Thank you, Krista.
She appreciates that he encourages healthy eating. I want to point out one recipe that I just find is astounding.
Do it.
That's the pot roasted turkey, because cooking it the traditional way has 35 grams of fat and 1,200 calories. Mm-hmm. Your way, it's 7 grams of fat and 244 calories.
It's incredible and really simple. I think that I don't have that recipe in front of me, but I think that we braised it a little bit, and I think that we added in, I think that maybe there's onions and carrots in it. It was a really simple, it's a one pot dish that we did in the oven.
Wow.
And I think we cut out
stuff.
The butter.
The butter, yeah. Bobby Dean's From Mama's Table to Mine is the name of the book. Everybody's favorite comfort foods at 350 calories or less. You can also see them Wednesdays at 9 on the Cooking Channel, Not My Mama's Meals. Thank you for the hour.
I enjoyed it, Mike. Thank you.